Welcome back to WBOI Presents. You and I are listening to the Trapdoors 2-year anniversary special. I'm Ben Clemmer, and it's great to be with you. The Trapdoors speakers do a wonderful job speaking for themselves with very little help from me. The next person you're about to hear is Becca Bell, introducing and describing the next speaker of the night. Thank you for listening.
I would say he's such a character that he is able to go by only one letter. I mean, it's like even better than Cher or Madonna. It's like not even one word. It's like one letter. This is Sesame Street. The next story is brought to you by the letter Q, who is our next storyteller.
It's hard to tell of happiness. I work food service, work at a bar, right? Which means I have a graduate degree. I actually wrote my Master of Arts thesis on the Lord of the Rings because I'm so practical and I have a Master of Arts in Mythology and Folklore, right? But anyway, no one less than J.R.R. Tolkien wrote in the Lord of the Rings that it's strange to say that a very bad story, a very tragic story, a very sad story might take very many words to tell. And will take a long time in the telling and make a very good story, but it's hard to tell of happiness. Because if you come across something that's sublime, what words will actually do that justice? At what point can I, no, you just, I can't, I lose my ability, right? So I'm going to tell you about Selden Van Sawyer. S. Van. I met S. Van. I was 18, and I was working at a family-owned Italian bistro in Northern Virginia, as where I learned to cook. And when I got hired in, he wasn't working there. He had worked there previously, but he had left for another job. So I got hired in, and I was learning how to cook sauté, and he came back, mid-90s. You know, he had this Stussy thing going on. He had the hat. He had like the 540. Thank you. Right? Some of you folks my age had a perpetual 545 shadow, right? His hairy Irishman. And we just clicked. He was like me. He was crass and witty and dark and beautiful. And he was on the grill on one end of the line, and I was on sauté. And we just kind of met, and our friendship began by us improvising lyrics over songs, right? Because in the mid-90s, you didn't have Spotify and shit like that. We were stuck with whatever was playing on the radio in the kitchen, right? So we would improvise lyrics, and, you know, the Police's "Wrapped Around Your Finger" became "I'll Be Buried in Your Sphincter," and we'll be bouncing like this back and forth to each other. And I just liked him. Immediately, I liked him. This guy was different. And got to know each other that summer, cooking, joking, hanging out. I was 18. He was older than me. I think he was like 22. Smoked a lot of dope, drank a lot. And it was early in the summer. And by the time that summer had passed, his birthday is September 13th and mine is September 16th. And he tells me, "I want to take you home with me. I want to show you my home." Now, he was born on Hatteras Island, North Carolina. And the story in his family goes that most of his family were descendants of cast-offs of Blackbeard's ship, you know, because Blackbeard's home was in Ocracoke, which is the next island down in the Outer Banks. Apparently, folks would just jump ship occasionally and shack up with folks who lived there on the islands, the locals, and that's where his family came from. So I want to take you home with me. And I'd never had a friend like this. So I'm into it, and we get some time off work, and we decide to make a trip out of it. And the night before we leave, he has a little apartment. And over at his place, and it's apartment's probably generous. It was quite literally a room with a bathroom. And we get stoned, and we're hanging out, and we run out of rolling papers because, again, you crazy kids with your gadgets, we didn't have pens and shit. We had to, it was ditch weed, right? We had to work for our high. Right? It's something we did. And we ran out of papers. But there was a 7-Eleven like two blocks away. So we decided to go down to the 7-Eleven and pick up a couple, like a pack of Job 1-5s, right? So we walk in, and there are two people in this 7-Eleven at, I don't know, 12:30, 1 o'clock at night. There is an African-American man at the counter, and he's talking to a man who's running the show, and this is quite obviously an individual who has regretted every decision in his life, right? He does not want to be in his early 60s working third shift at a 7-Eleven, like white hair, thick glasses, just angry look. This was back in the day, again, before you entered codes on your caps, right, to win a prize, right? You just opened the cap and it said, hey, congratulations, you win a free Sprite. The guy had six caps that all said free Sprites. And he had a six pack of 20-ounce bottles of Sprite, but they were in the, like the thing that kills dolphins, you know, those the pack, right? And he's trying to explain to this old man, I'm not trying to hustle you. I've got six caps. Here are six bottles. I'm not running a scam here. And this conversation goes on for several minutes, and Seldon and I are baked, right? We're stoned as fuck, and we're the only other two people in the store, and I'm behind the customer, and Seldon's behind me, and we're watching this exchange go on, and finally, the guy behind the counter goes, well, maybe you should try and run your hustle tomorrow morning, right? Maybe you should run it with my manager, see what he has to say. Okay, sir. Okay, I'll do that. I'll come back and see your manager and offer him my six, and he scrapes his six, and you see, like, if it's possible for this white man to get any whiter, it does. He just, like, the color, like, drains it because he realizes he just fucked up, right? Guy really calmly scrapes his caps into his hand, walks out, six pack of Sprite still sitting there on the counter. Now it's my turn. Seldon's behind me, walk up to the counter, pulls a six pack off. He's like, what do you want? I lost my ish. I started laughing at him. I'm laughing in his face. I am losing my ish because he knows he fucked up, and so do I. And just, I'm laughing at him, and I fall back into Seldon's arms, and he wraps his arms around my shoulder. We're holding each other together, laughing at this whole man, like, dude, you're going to have a bad day, right? And it was just, and it's just like, what do you want? Like, just pack of Job 1-5s. That's $1.16. Oh my God, so 20. And he didn't have change in his drawer, so he had to close the drawer and go in the back, and it was great. So we walk back to his apartment, and we roll a joint again, and we smoke. Crawl into bed. Seldon left on an album while we fell asleep, and it was like 2 in the morning. We wanted to be up at like 5 to make this drive, right? It was like 5 hours. I was in Fredericksburg, Virginia. It's like 5 hours from where we were to his hometown in Hatteras. And it's Santana, Live in South America, Sacred Fire. And if you've not heard that album, it's worth listening to. So as we're in bed together and this song is playing, I've got like the stone spins, which is not like the drunk spins where I'm going about to throw up, just like I'm in this zen moment with this song, and pass out, wake up a few hours later because, you know, we're young, we can do that, and get in the car, and we drive to Hatteras. It was my first time on the coast. You know, I lived on beaches my whole life, but had never seen the Outer Banks. We go down. 9 in the morning, we roll into his mom's house in Buxton, which is where the Cape Hatteras Lighthouse is. His mom is waiting for us, making us breakfast, this huge southern breakfast. You want a beer? Hey, still got that Goldschlager from your birthday, Sal. He's like, so she's pulling out like liquor from the fridge. And I'm like, this is, I can do island life. This is cool, right? We eat and we drink and we grab some Red Stripes and we go out to the beach. And it's my first time seeing the Outer Banks in that moment. And there's this boat like trawling right along just past the breakers. And notice it was his sister and her boyfriend. And they're hitting a school of Spanish mackerel. And they're just fishing. And so he sees her and waves and they wave us out. So fully clothed, red stripes in hand, we're like rolling across the waves, right? They pull up to the boat, they pull us in, and then we're fishing. Like Selden and I and his sister and whatever his name was, or just we're fishing. And as we're pulling these Spanish mackerel, this school of bottlenose dolphin is feeding on the same school, and they break right off the, you couldn't paint this moment, right? And I just look at him. I'm like, this is something. And we fish, we come back to shore, and there's a little fish shop down the beach from where his mother lived. So we go get some scallops, because if we're going to cook out, and we're cooking out because we have all this Spanish mackerel, we get scallops and we're going to wrap them in bacon and we're going to grill all this shit. And it's all great, right? Eating and drinking and smoking all goddamn day long. And then evening shows up. And, other less experienced folks start passing out, but we're still sitting up. And we roll another joint, and he's like, let's take a walk. Just if you've ever been on the Outer Banks, and if you haven't, you need to, right? Highway 12 runs right down the center of Hatteras Island, and you can stop your car anywhere, and stand on your bumper and look over the dunes right and left, and there's the water. And you can hear the surf everywhere. So we walk over this dune, and there we are on the beach. And he turns us up the beach, and we start walking. The wind is up, and it's like walking into sandpaper. And he walks me from his mom's place on the beach right up to the base of the Cape Hatteras Lighthouse with all these big sandbags. And in case you hadn't seen it, when they were dropping sandbags into the Brinks in Katrina, remember that, right? That's what we're talking about. It's like Army Corps of Engineers sort of taking out sandbags. And we crawl up on top of these mound of sandbags right at the fucking base of the lighthouse in the middle of the night. We light up. And it's like monks meditating. And there's this incense about us, and it just gets quiet. And you know love is special when you don't have to say anything. We smoke and we're sitting there, and there's this perfect, like the stars align. There was this perfect natural rhythm. It was a clear night. And the light would cross the water. And as the light would cross the water, there would be the crash of the surf. And then that hiss, right? Because when the surf goes back, and for a split second, all the stars would disappear. You'd see all this blue and green plankton on the far ends of the beach just vanish because the lighthouse. And then the light would pass, and all the stars would come back out. And there was all this blue green in the water, all this plankton left and right. And we sat there for hours. And I remember looking at him. I remember turning my head and looking at him and just like, I want to kiss you. I want you in my arms. I love you. It isn't just the moment. This is you. And the only words that come out of my mouth are, I'm hungry. So he looks at me, he's like, yeah. And so, walk back to his mom's place. And I'm thinking about Spanish mackerel and bacon wrapped scallops, right? I'm a savory kind of person. This sounds great. And I'm digging around, and there are three channels on TV in 1995, especially on the beach. And he turns something on. It's some public access show that's showing a Monty Python, the Holy Grail. How stereotypical is that for stoners, right? But so here we are, and he goes to the freezer, and he pulls out this little cup of ice cream. And I'm not an ice cream guy. I do not like ice cream. I don't. And I'm still thinking about scallops and fish, and he's digging into this ice cream. He's like, do you want some ice cream? I'm not really into ice cream. It was Ben and Jerry's, which was new in 1995. And like, well, what is that? Well, it's Chubby Hubby. And like all the like, you know, phallic associations are like rolling in my head. Wow. Okay. Like, no. I'm just, but we're watching the movie and he's eating his ice cream and I'm watching him eat his ice cream and he's like digging in. And he's just like, and he's obviously enjoying this ice cream. And at some point I'm just like, dude, can I have a bite? He's like, yeah. Let me get you a pretzel, because it's banana flavored ice cream with chocolate covered peanut butter filled pretzels. And so he digs this spoonful of ice cream out and he feeds it to me like on this first date. And I'm just like, and again, I'm just like, hearts like flashing in my eyes. I'm like, it's pretty good ice cream, dude. He's like, yeah, it's great. And it was, I knew at that moment. This was my guy. A few years later, because time happens, right? And like I said, it's hard to tell of happiness. So life does this to us. You have your best friends and you're moving here and there. And sometimes you're closer and sometimes you're not. But then I was in the Army and I was stationed in Northern Virginia and he was still in North Carolina. And I went, oh God, I went AWOL. I was a lousy soldier. I went AWOL so often. It wasn't funny because you're supposed to not leave more than a 2-hour window of recall from your base. You should not be more than 120 minutes away from your base in case this shit happens, right? I was constantly driving down 5.5 hours to North Carolina, right? Had a good weekend, was flush with cash, and he comes up to DC where we're staying with a friend of mine, Tom, who's also a good friend of ours. Let's have a good time. So we buy an 8-ball of blow, because I was a good soldier, right? We buy this 8-ball of blow, and we're partying through DC. It's something I forgot to mention in an earlier story, but I took him to a place called Legal Seafoods in Alexandria. And that weekend, they had a 30-year single malt Glenlivet scotch, and it was like $30 a pour. We had two. Because I had the money. I'm just like, no, dude, we'll never do this again. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. Right? And that was our friendship, and that was our love. And so still coked out of our minds. It's 3 a.m, and we go to Bob and Edith's, which is this little world-famous diner right there in North Arlington. It's a half mile from the Pentagon. If you walk in there today, there are all these black and white pictures of all these dignitaries from all over the world who come to Bob and Edith's to eat. And it was the first time I ever had a one-eye burger, and that was S. Van's doing. So they offered me the one-eyed, I didn't know what that was. And he's like, dude, it's an over-easy egg. Take it. So I get this bacon cheeseburger with this over-easy egg and steak sauce. And he's sitting right next to me at the bar, and we're so fucked off. And I just bite into it, and it's juicy and wonderful, and the yolk breaks, and it's like running, because it's in mid-90s, right, so I have a goatee, right? So I'm like running down this goatee, and it's all phallic and-ish, and I just... He's kind of look at him. He's like, and we don't need to say anything. It's just this moment, because some of these moments last a lifetime. Next morning, you know, we're still wired. Our friend Tom was vomiting the night before, and we're trying to get directions to Baltimore because we want to go to the National Aquarium in Baltimore. We both love aquariums. And Tom eventually gets up and we get on the road. We go to Baltimore. We smoke another bowl because that's kind of what we did. And get to the National Aquarium. We both been there before, but they had a seahorse exhibit. It was one of those like rotating exhibits, say the seahorse exhibit. So you walk in, and the first tank next to you, these little dwarf seahorses, they're like the size of your pinky fingernail, right? And you're walking through, you're seeing all these seahorses. And in the back corner, there's this huge semicircular tank, and both of our eyes just kind of fixate on it, and we walk towards it. And they had leafy sea dragons. I don't know if you know what those are or not. Google them if you don't. These gorgeous seahorses that look like floating kelp, but they're all brilliantly colored, and we're so stoned. And we're just standing there next to each other, and I wanted to hold his hand because we're like shoulder to shoulder. And we sit there for probably 30 minutes just watching these seahorses, these sea dragons float. Right? Moments that last a lifetime. Not long after that, I gave him a call because I had met someone. I was living up here at the time, and or I, actually I was still stationed here, but she lived up here at the time, and he was still in the Carolinas. And I was like, dude, I want you to meet somebody because I'm about to do something stupid. I didn't have any family, right? But his approval meant something. And the woman I proposed to, you know, Selden had to give his thumbs up. It was her birthday. So I had this whole like week that I planned, flew her down from Fort Wayne, and we had a bunch of stuff that I had planned for. Then we went down to North Carolina, and this was the point of the trip, right? And you can meet Selden, but didn't tell her this. And Connie was beautiful. Connie is beautiful. She's a beautiful woman. And I go up to him, and it's like, I'm thinking about doing this. And he's like, dude, you'd be a fool not to. You're stupid not to try. That was the weekend I proposed to Connie. And it was important to me that he was a part of that. He was the best man at my wedding, right? And life continues, and life moves on. In 2013, by this point, he had had a partner, Jenny. They'd grown up on the island together, had fallen in love. And this is huge anarchist. He's like, off the government. We're not going to sign a piece of paper like British. We know we're married. Okay, cool. And she was the same way. But they met there. And Connie and I, because of the connection that we had to Hatteras at that point, got married on the beach at dawn on Hatteras Island. And Tom, who I mentioned earlier, was so impressed by what we did that he and his wife came down 4 years later after Connie and I got married, and they got married in the same beach, right? So this was a place for us, right? 2013, I'm working on my doctorate in at BGSU, which I did not finish. And we're all out on the beach. Chrissy's Tom's wife. Chrissy's very pregnant. She's like 6 months pregnant. And they had just found out that Jenny was 6 to 8 weeks along, right? And Chrissy and Tom were on the beach taking photos, and Jenny, Selden, myself, and Connie are in the water. We're just in the surf. We're just playing around. I grew up near the water. Selden surfed. I surfed. We both been snorkeling. We knew the beach, right? We'd done this our whole lives. And we're standing there, and it's maybe just above your ankle, like a third of the way deep. We're all just playing around, and I turn. No flags up, no warning signs, nothing. And I turn and I look at the surf, and I see the two waves coming together. And I don't have the time in my mind to say, ish. And then it's just, they crash, and we're in a riptide. And all four of us are dragged out. And Jenny is dry drowning. She's in a full panic. She's flailing in the water. Now, if you've never been in a riptide, and I hope you're not, the thing to do with a riptide is to let it take you out. Because what it's going to do, it's going to pull you away from the beach, and it's going to drop you off about a half mile down, and you just walk home, and everything's fine. Jenny's in a full panic, and she's dragging Selden down. I have my hands around Connie's waist, and I'm forcing her over the breakers, stupid, but it's what I could think to do to get her to the shore. And I think I get her close enough, and I scream out, "Get Tom!" And I turn around and dive back in the water. And I get to Selden, and we're so exhausted, we're just taking turns dragging Jenny, because she was going to pull one of us down. So one of us would go under to like prop her up over the waves, and the other one would like try and kick and pull her forward. And in this way, this is how we got her back to the beach. And we get back to the beach, and Selden and Jenny are fine. And then I hear Connie screaming because I hadn't gotten her in far enough. And I turn around, and I go back in, and I have no strength left at this point, and I have my hands around her waist, and I'm just getting dragged and just like pushing her over the breakers and fight her back in. Got all this road rash down my left side, and I'm vomiting salt water, but everybody's okay. But Jenny loses the baby. Like this the stress of it, like it cost her the baby. And that haunted S-Van. That bothered him. It put him in a dark spot for a long time. We kept talking about him. Last time I saw him was in 2015, and I had been accepted to speak at some academic conference in New Orleans. And He was living in Cape Girardeau, Missouri at the time, which, in case you don't know, is the birthplace of Rush Limbaugh. And so he's very unhappy there. But I call him up. I'm like, I can't afford a plane ticket, dude. I'm driving to the French Quarter. Do you want to come with me? Drive to Cape Girardeau, pick him up, drive to the French Quarter. It was a 3-day academic conference. I was there for 3 hours, and that was just because I only had 20 minutes to speak, but it's rude to like walk out after you give your speech. I got to sit there and like, yeah, that was great. Very insightful. Thanks a lot. Right? How that works, right? And we did what we did. We found these moments together that last a lifetime. Wandering through the French Quarter, wandering through New Orleans, finding different places to eat, drinking with locals, stop off at the old French Absinthe House that's right there on the corner of Bourbon Street. Get so drunk. Because Absinthe's like 130, 140 proof. I'll take that one. And then we'll do that one. It was a great afternoon. And that was these moments. And it's hard to tell of that kind of happiness. And we used to joke. He knew how I felt about him. We used to joke about it. I told him I like, love to pour like gravy down the sides of the cat and go to work on him with a like, plate of biscuits. Like, let's do this. But straight as a grizzly, this man had no interest in my cock whatsoever. But I also was able to tell him, I don't need that, dude. Just you. It's just you. And he has found this quiet happiness in his life. You know, he and Jenny are doing well. They're in Cape Girardeau. He's cooking again. He's doing these little this bistro stuff, this great spiced up Southern flair. And it's one of those things where life, if you live long enough, you see your roads kind of diverge. A thing isn't beautiful because it lasts. If we had the flowers of spring every day, all year long, every year, we would stop seeing them. Diamonds might be an exception, but maybe diamonds are beautiful because we know we won't last the way the stone will. That brevity makes something so precious. And our roads have diverged a little bit, but I carry them with me all the time. This is the tooth of a sperm whale. This was a 30-year-old bull that died out at sea and washed up in Australia. And I bought two teeth, this one and a matching one from the back of the jaw from a farmer in southern Indiana. Different story. Selden has the other one. I found an artist in Northwest Ohio that I really enjoyed. And I commissioned two separate paintings from her. And they hang in my bedroom to this day of leafy sea dragons. He's always with me. And there's that moment that lasts forever. And he's happy, and I'm happy for him. And he is, without a doubt, the love of my life. And I guess that's just kind of the way our lives go sometimes. I haven't been in the water since 2013. Not even a swimming pool. I couldn't do it. Right? I just couldn't do it. I heard like breakers in my nightmares for months afterwards. If he were next to me, I'd go back in the water. And I don't know that I believe much in forever or whatever that might be, but he and I will always be on those sandbags. Forever. And that's my story. Thanks.